Okay, we'll call the meeting of the LCC together. 6 minutes late, I apologize to each of you for not respecting your time the way I should have. We had a little discussion and I just ended up a little bit late. I apologize from caucus. First order of business is review of the minutes from December 17th of 2003. In other words, we haven't met for a year and a half. And have any of you missed us for a year and a half? You have. Okay, and Representative Metzen has had the chance to review
Senator
the minutes.
Senator Metzen.
Okay,
Mr.
Senator Metzen. Well, we'll make the motion to approve the minutes from December 7, 2003. Any discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The minutes will be approved. Next order of business. Reviewing the establishment of the subcommittees, the two subcommittees. Mr. Hubinger, mm-hmm. Do you want to refer to that at all?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the Electric Court Aid Commission. LCC has the ability and the authority under its statute to establish subcommittees to carry out some of its functions, and in the past it has created two of them. One, the Subcommittee on Employee Relations, which has the responsibility to review and provide interim approval of labor contracts and compensation plans. By law, those subcommittees expire on December 31st of the even-numbered year. If the LCC wants to have someone else take on these responsibilities, it needs to reestablish the subcommittees. So there are two resolutions in your packet. The first one, the resolutions are in blue paper. The first one would reestablish the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. It's the same language that you've used for the last several years, except for updating the dates.
Okay. Discussion amongst members? Feelings?
Adoption.
Okay. We should do them one at a time. Senator Johnson moves adoption of the establishment of the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. So those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. And Senator Johnson then also moves that we look at the Subcommittee on Administrative Rules and reestablish that. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. That motion is also approved. Next, Mr. Hubinger, we look at the compensatory time for the LCC employees. I believe with some changes in the House and Senate of compensatory times of this year, that what you have before us is something that would be similar to those compensation times that the Senate and House employees would have.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
I know that the Senate and House both made some changes. I think they were appropriate, Dean. I think they were good to do, and I think we should extend the same comp time to our LCC employees. So, Senator Johnson?
Move the adoption.
Senator Johnson moves the adoption of the comp time policy. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion is approved. Timesheet policy. Similar to the House, I believe, timesheet policy that we do have. And this would cover approximately, we have about 150 employees in LCC?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Chad, go ahead.
Okay. Good evening, Mr. Chair and members. Before you is proposed changes to the LCC's payroll and timesheet policy. The changes are not substantive and are largely a result of changing from a semi-monthly payroll period to biweekly payroll periods.
Thank you.
And just to go quickly over the changes on the first page, first paragraph, it simply clarifies how employees are paid. The last paragraph there, you'll see a change, and that's simply a change in the employee reference, in employee reference to be consistent with how the employees are referred to in our benefit book. On the second page, you'll notice we're proposing to strike language needed for part-time employees. Because semi-monthly payroll periods differ, we had to make some special accommodations for part-time employees who work different hours on different days of the week. That language is no longer needed because now under a biweekly system, our pay periods are consistent and the same days of the week are in each pay period. So that language is not necessary.
Yes.
Those, I believe, are the substantive changes. I'd be happy to stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Members, are there any questions for Chad, for Mr. Tuitt, in regards to the timesheet policy that's before us? Again, very similar to the House policy. I know that.
You need a motion.
Senator Metzen?
Also move.
Senator Metzen moves that we approve the timesheet policy that is before us. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. Next, Greg, Mr. Hubinger, in regards to the Electric Energy Task Force, we have to bill back some money.
And members, the legislature has created the Electric Energy Task Force, which studies electric issues, especially related to renewable energies, in regard to policy for the state of Minnesota. Senator Metzen is one of the co-chairs. By law, the costs for that task force are billed back to ratepayers, and the process requires that the task force submit a request to the LCC, and then the LCC submits the bill to the Department of Commerce, which has oversight over the utilities in terms of rate making. There's a resolution in your packet that would charge back $37,000 for expenses of the task force that it's incurred over the last 3 years.
Okay.
Chairman, I will move this resolution. As
Senator Metzen moves the resolution before us to do the bill back to the ratepayers for the Electric Energy Task Force. This is just to get our money back again. It's not a question of whether we should continue the Electric Energy Task Force or not, but we want to get our money back, right? Okay, discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion is approved. The LCC housekeeping bill that is before us to be introduced. Greg?
Mr. Chair and members, staff were asked to review our chapter just to determine whether there were obsolete provisions in the laws that govern the operations of the joint offices. And we are suggesting some language for you to consider in terms of in respect to a housekeeping bill. And that is an unofficial draft that's in your packet. It's a four-page document. I thought I would just go over the more substantive changes that are being suggested here for your consideration. The first item is on page 1, line 17 to 21. This would allow the chair of the LCC to designate another member from their own body to serve as chair during their own term. This was suggested by the speaker.
In fact, members, to be very honest here, I look to designate this chair to someone else in my caucus and found out that I could not do so. So I requested this change to be brought forward. I think it certainly is a reasonable request.
Mr. Chair and members, the second substantive suggestion is also on page 1, line 34, which would provide explicit authority for the LCC to accept grants and gifts. This was a suggestion by Senator Kelly, who is interested in pursuing options where the legislature could increase its outreach efforts in classrooms in Minnesota. We can accept grants and gifts now through the Department of Finance, but it's a fairly cumbersome process. This language was thought to be to allow greater flexibility and to speed up that process. Mr. Chair, the next substantive proposal is on page 2, line 34, section 4. This would delete an existing commission, the Commission on Minnesota-Ontario Matters. I believe this was created in about year 2000. I think it was a representative Irv Anderson proposal. Unfortunately, the Ontario Parliament has never appointed its members, and it has never met. And he agrees that it's time to let this one go. The next suggestion is on page 3, starting on line 19. This deals with the process by which the Electric Energy Task Force assessments are charged back to the Department of Commerce. Currently, we have this process that we just went through a few minutes ago where the entire LCC has to approve the expenses of the task force back to the Department of Commerce. The chair of the LCC has the authority to approve all other expenditures. We thought it would be more expeditious to allow the chair to handle this process. The next item begins on page 3, line 35, section 6, and relates to the Compensation Council, which recently completed its work. Staff wanted to make leadership aware of a perspective issue, that the membership of the Compensation Council is made up of eight citizens appointed by the governor, two citizens appointed by the judiciary, and then six legislators. It puts legislators in the perspective of, in the position of having to propose and deal with salaries for themselves. And so we thought leadership ought to have the opportunity to talk about whether it might be more appropriate for the legislature to also appoint citizens to represent them on that council. We also suggest language here that would have the appointments to that council be made in January of the odd-numbered year. Under current law, you could have the appointments made on October 1st or October 15th and then have a change in the governorship or in the majority for either house, and you have members of the Compensation Council representing the former majority party. And then finally, on page 4, subdivision 3, line 3, we recommend or suggest that you consider having the deadline for those recommendations be April 1st rather than May 1st. May 1st is long after most appropriation decisions have been made, and it would be too late to implement those accounts of recommendations.
If after discussion, Greg, this body approves these changes, you'll go find a Senate and the House author?
Mr. Chair, that's right.
Okay. Discussion, members, from either House or Senate in relationship to any of the specific provisions brought forward in this housekeeping bill? Anything strike your fancy one way or another?
Also move, Mr. Chair, I'll move the...
I think it would be good to have an approval of the housekeeping bill. That kind of gives you the authority to go forward and find the authors in the Senate and the House, doesn't it? Then Senator Menson does approve or does recommend approval of this housekeeping language before us. Is there any discussion, Mary? Representative Murphy, excuse me.
Mr. Chair, I want to hear some more talk about citizens instead of representatives and senators. Okay. And where would those citizens come from? Would the Speaker and the Senate President or the Senate Majority Leader appoint those citizens, or what?
I believe, Representative Murphy, the answer would be yes, we would. But the Senate Majority Leader and the Speaker, I think the thought was that we would maybe get a little a bit of the conflict of interest out of the process of the Compensation Council if we were to remove our own members and put citizens there. Greg, was that your discussion that seemed to have, again, some reasonability to it?
Mr. Chair, less a conflict of interest than a self-serving interest.
Senator Belanger.
Mr. Chairman, how long has it been since we've ever done anything on that?
1999, Senator Belanger.
That's hardly a conflict of interest.
Mr. Chair.
We were just following the Senate leadership in the House.
It's your fault.
Now, my fault is his fault.
I stand to blame. And please tell everybody in the state that, will you? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, in the long run, though, or at the end, it's still, we have to take the votes as
yes,
representatives and as senators on the issue, so we're going to say, is this going to be easier then for us to say, well, the Compensation Council is recommending this and we really can't go against their wishes, or is it putting the accountability one step away from us?
Representative Murphy, I don't think it puts the accountability one step away, because you're correct. We still would have to vote A or nay on a bill to pass a compensation package. I do think it does, to some small degree, take the conflict, the self-serving decision away from us internally. Senator Belanger is probably correct from where he's coming from. We haven't in the legislature here had the decision-making ability to increase a salary for now. It will be 8 years. It's 6 now, but it'll be 8 before we get to the next election cycle. And that probably is wrong. We haven't made that decision one way or another, and I'm not sure we will, but at least if we can take one step away from what is termed or perceived or seemed to be our own self-interest, I think that would be a good step. But if members don't want it in here, it's no problem to me. We can take it out. I can take it out, leave it in. I won't lose any sleep. Would anybody want to take this provision out of the housekeeping bill? Does anybody want to keep it in? Okay. You're going to have a hard time finding an author, I think, Mr. Oeblinger.
We just got a race per diem again.
I'll renew my motion.
Okay. Senator Metzen renews his motion that we approve this housekeeping bill and encourage members of the House or Senate to author the bill. Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay?
No.
Okay. The motion does prevail. Let's see. Next, a review of our financial audit. Chad, you will do this, and my understanding in reading through this last week is that we had a pretty good clean bill of health given to us.
We did indeed, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, a copy of the financial audit report, the management letter, and a memo from me is in your folder summarizing the results. The LCC conducts an audit every other year, and to accomplish that, it issues an RFP, and Virchow, Krauss & Company was selected as our fiscal year 2004 auditor, and they were the low-cost bidder at $8,800. As the chair indicated, the LCC received another clean audit. We're particularly proud of this result because of the many changes we've had this last year or two. Some of you might know that we changed the statewide accounting system, and others may know that we lost our longtime fiscal services supervisor, Sandy Gulbranson, to retirement. She was here since the inception of the LCC, believe it or not. The report itself, the auditor expressed an opinion that financial statements present fairly the financial position of the legislative commissions and joint agencies and the change in the financial position for the year 2004. There were no matters involving internal controls that were considered material weaknesses, and the results of compliance testing yielded no instances of noncompliance as required to be reported under the government auditing standards. There were no transactions that were significant and unusual or lacking authoritative guidance, and there were no disagreements or difficulties with management. Special thanks to our LCC Fiscal Services assistants, Denise Jobe and Sandy Foreman, for their work, and I'd be happy to stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
Well, it's sure good to get a clean bill of health, Chad. I think you and Greg, Denise and Sandy should all get some recognition for that, for the good bill of health that we did get from the audit, and the other directors, too, the director in the LCC. Do we need to approve it at all, Greg, or is that just for our...
Mr. Chair, I think our practice has been to accept the report.
To accept it? Senator Metzen moves that we accept the report on our financial audit. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion is approved. Let's see. Ms. Timmons. Michelle, if you'd come forward. You could... I know we're going through a bill drafting new system, and if you could give us an update.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members, Mr. Hubinger asked me to give you a brief update today about the new computer system that we are developing. And this was all up and set a few minutes ago. But I'm going to be speaking from this handout that's in your packet, and we'll be having that as a PowerPoint presentation. And what I will try to do for you is answer a number of questions. Is it not responding? What I'll try to do for you is answer a number of questions. I'll just talk from the handout, and as we get it up, we can join the PowerPoint. I want to try to answer the questions. Why are we doing this new system? What kinds of technology did we select? what have we accomplished and actually implemented? What have we programmed, and what do we have in testing? What do we have left to do, and what is it going to cost? It's coming up. I think the answer to the first question is fairly self-explanatory. We have our system running now on a mainframe that we purchased back in 1971. And so that simply is not going to last forever. We are having difficulty finding replacement hardware and software for it. In fact, a couple Fridays ago, we had an hour and a half worth of downtime, and we had a very difficult time bringing the computer back up.
So a couple years ago, did we go down during the last days of the session for a little while?
We were concerned about it, and I believe we did have a power outage. And that caused us to go down, and we had a difficult time bringing it back up because of some battery considerations. So what we did is in 2002 we started a replacement project that is using this XML technology. And XML stands for Extensible Markup Technology. It's a new standards-based technology, and it's what's been recommended by NCSL for new legislative computer systems. I would tell you that most of the comparable systems in other states are costing about $10 million. That's about the going price for these new systems. We also chose the XML because it has a tagging concept. And the tagging concept is familiar to our users because our old mainframe system uses these same kinds of tags. Looks like we're getting a little, we're getting somewhere here maybe. Anyway, we did implement some improvements on our web system for 2005. You may recall that in 2004 the bill status system was not performing quite. Here we go. All right, was not performing quite the way. It's not performing quite the way we wanted it to. And so what we did is we put in a new Oracle database for the House and Senate bill status systems. We improved the search screens. We basically what we did is we took one old piece of Unix hardware and we replaced that with two new Linux boxes. So state-of-the-art hardware. And we also migrated the revisor's internal build track system to the new Oracle database. And here I thought what I'd show you are some of the screens, the search screens that have been redesigned. You've probably noticed this, and I want to give a lot of credit to especially the Legislative Reference Library staff as well as House and Senate desk staff who had a lot of input into these screens. Now, here's the basic search. If you go to this one, we're showing you the advanced search, and you can see that this user is searching for a bill that has to do with income tax that was, and the chief author of this bill was Senator Rest, and looking at this time frame, the February of 05 time frame. Now, here's the results of that search. Came up with two bills. And let's suppose this user is interested in the one that had to do with the tsunami relief and clicks on the status. And here's what you can see. And you can see that rather than just showing you the status in the Senate or the status in the House, we can show you both. And we're showing the Senate with the blue background and House with the green background, so it's easy to distinguish. If this were a House file, we'd show you the House status first. So that gives you a sample of what we actually have implemented. Now, where are we in the development process? We've invested about $1 million in new hardware and software already. We purchased some software from Arbortext, a company in Michigan that has a very good XML editor. We purchased the Oracle database, as I mentioned. That's a company based in California, but with about 1,000 employees here in Minnesota. The customization of the software is about two-thirds complete. We also have a number of major conversion projects done, the 2004 statutes and the laws from 83 to 04. More specifically, we've written code for a number of the core bill drafting processes, amendments and auto-engrossing, committee reports, conference committee reports. We've got prototypes of side-by-sides and Senate desk documents and done a number of quality control steps. So I wanted to show you just a few screenshots to give you an idea of what this is going to look like. You can see here I talked about these tags, and you can see that the structure of the document is broken down into tags. So that took quite a bit of customization to get the proper tagging structure for each kind of document. Here you can see a toolbar that the user will use, and we have special tools to save time and generate the bills quickly. Things like generating the numerical portion of a title, automatically renumbering, inserting page and line numbers, removing page and line numbers, which we sometimes need to do, checking the statutory order. So all those represent customized programming that had to be done. Here's an example of a quality control program. This is the statutes check. The user here has run this change against the existing statute, and it'll show the user we deleted a shall, we inserted a will, and it's showing it in colors as well. That also is a customization. Here, what we're doing, we're going to create an amendment for a House committee now. We're going to create an amendment to a bill. And this screen shows you what the user will see as the amendment itself is created. And then we've done the customized programming to automatically fold that amendment into the bill. That's what we call auto-engross. And here you see the result, where credited is automatically stricken, and the user of the computer will see it in red, and the new language in green. Now, this is what the user will see. When you see this in print form, it will be very similar. It will look very similar to what you see now. But we are going to have both the page and line numbers on the left-hand side for you, which I hope will be easier to use and easier for drafters as they're drafting amendments. We're also going to what's called a proportional font, not the mono width where each letter takes up the same amount of space. This font, the letters take up whatever space they need. So an I doesn't need as much room as an A, for example. And that should save us about 10% on our paper to go to that proportional font. And here, for example, we've got a program to create a conference committee report. This is going to be a House a committee report to House File number 902, and we're going to be adding this A4 amendment in. And here's the screenshot that shows you we automatically pull in the chair of the committee and the appropriate title, the committee action, and the appropriate recommendations and the date. So that's just a sample of screenshots to give you an idea of the customizations. What's yet to do? We have a lot of conversion projects. Because we're implementing in the middle of the biennium, we're going to have to convert all these 2005 bills. Of course, once this session is over, we need to convert the 2005 session laws and the statute supplement that's a result of the work that you're doing this session. We have the whole administrative rule conversion. We have quite a few software customizations left for resolutions, enrollments, finalizing the Senate desk documents and side-by-sides. The editing and tables are pretty, that's a big project. We have a lot of programs, probably 15 different programs that we use today to do the editing of the session laws and the statutes. Administrative rules will be a big project. The court rules we hope to minimize by doing a small amount of customization. What's the time frame? We plan to begin drafting bills in the new system this summer. In the 2006, we plan to use the new system for the first time in session. The first publication cycle will be in 2006 during the interim, and then we plan to be done with the project in terms of conversion of the administrative rules and implementing that by the end of calendar 2006, at which point we hope to unplug from the mainframe. And funding requests, the governor had originally recommended canceling our carry forward. That's the primary source of funding for the project, and that is all obligated and will be spent by June 30th of 05. We've come up with a figure for one-time funding of about a bit over $1.5 million. And we also are going to have some additional costs for maintenance agreements for the software, primarily the software, some hardware, but primarily the software that we purchased in terms of base additions. And so we will have spent about $4.4 million on the project by June 30th. With the additional one-time cost, I'm projecting a cost of about $6 million, so about 60% of the cost of other comparable systems around the country.
Ms. Timmons, in regards to the requests at the end.
Yes.
Clarify for me the $1.5 million that is necessary.
Correct.
I had a discussion with Greg last week in relationship to one-third of it coming from the House carry forward, one-third of it coming from the Senate carry forward, and one-third from the LCC carry forward. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, yes.
At least from our standpoint, Dean, did you, Senator Johnson, did you do the same in the Senate?
Mr. Chair, I believe that is correct.
Okay. So that'll take care of
that. That would take care of the one-time request, absolutely.
Okay. And then the next bullet point or whatever it is?
The base, I think Mr. Hubinger, you know, had in mind that at a second LCC meeting we'd be talking about base budgets.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to alert the LCC that there is an issue, from my standpoint at least, with the base.
So that will be added to either your target request or targets that we discuss here in a couple of weeks about the targets for the LCC.
That I would hope that would happen, yes.
Members, questions of Ms. Timmons in regards to the replacement project that she's just gone through? Funding? Yes, Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Timmons,
Would you repeat again what you said about savings in paper just because you're using a different font?
About 10% is what we were estimating from using the different font. Mm-hmm.
And how much paper do we use?
Oh, let me see. I just answered that question, at least for the revisor's office, for a reporter a few weeks ago. It seemed to me we were using, 10 cases or something like that just for our office. So I've not analyzed that for the entire legislature, but I, certainly could try to get some kind of a figure together for you if you'd like me to do that.
Representative Murphy?
Kind of interesting, yeah.
Other questions? I think Ms. Timmons did mention, Senator Johnson, that in a couple, maybe two to three weeks, we'll be having a second meeting to deal with LCC budgets with their targets.
Right.
Maybe a couple of weeks, be right after the break, we think.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, just a comment. I'd just like to thank the revisor's office and all the people involved in this project because it was a real mess when I first learned of it, and I think members first learned about it, I think, in like 1993 and 1994, and something obviously had to be done. And I think that at the end of the day, we're going to have the state-of-the-art system at a fairly low price. And I know that it was an awful lot of hard work by not only the revisor, but a lot of members of the staff in order to come up with this solution. So thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess this gives me a greater appreciation for when we say the words, I need an amendment drafted. I appreciate the steps being walked through that. I have a quick question for you, though,
sure.
Ms. Timmons. I often hear us talk about, it costs this much per bill. Is that a measure that you use at all in your work in the revisor's office?
We actually, Representative Broad and members, we really have been asked that question so many times, and we have never come up with a good way to calculate what it costs per bill. It makes so much difference how long the bill is, how many drafts you go through, what the complexity level is. It's very difficult to say what. The average cost of a bill is. What I will tell you that you might be interested in knowing is the bill drafting pace in the revisor's office this year is on par with the record we set in the 2001 long session. So we're on par with our record pace for bill drafting.
That may not be good news.
No, but it's probably something. I always get asked that question too. So
and it's not as simple as just taking 3,500 bills and dividing by your total cost.
No, it isn't. It is not that simple.
Some would like to make it that simple.
Right, but if you really want an honest answer, it's not that simple.
No, I appreciate that.
Anybody else, as long as Michelle is here, that would like a question answered? Or if not, Ms. Simmons, go forward.
Thank you.
Do good.
All right. Thank you so much.
Chad, back to you again.
Yes, briefly.
Yeah,
Mr.
records
Chair.
Retention.
In your members, Mr. Chair, members, in your packets, is a copy of our recently adopted records retention schedule. It's a two-page document front to back. The schedule was largely modeled after the Senate's and the Department of Human Services general retention policy. It essentially addresses records that are commonly maintained by our LCC Fiscal Services Office. And I'd be happy to stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
Are there any questions of Mr. Tewitt? Any questions? Seeing none, Jen, thank you. And then Mr. Greenwalt, Mr. Kern, and Mr. Eichen. There's some technology investment needs that you'd like to speak to us about?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, on behalf of the Senate, the House, and the commissions, I believe we wanted to speak about the additional investments we see that are necessary in the coming biennium for the joint committees and agencies of the legislature. You should have a handout, which is a spreadsheet listing a number of items, legislative technology apportionment request, appropriation requests for 2006-2007. Just very quickly, the Senate and the House rely very heavily on the legislative joint agencies, the revisor, the library, the LCC for things like their media streaming, GIS, bill drafts, as we just looked at, and the web page, which the library does so much work on. We are concerned, and we want to maintain three basic parts of that, and that is the integrity of the information that we have. We want to make sure that there's availability of that information, in other words, for the members, for the staff, and for the public, that that information is always available on a 24/7 basis. And also we are concerned about the security of the system. Business continuity in the legislature is extremely important, and we need to make sure that that stays in place. The list of items on the first page basically details with that sort of information, items such as intrusion detection and security information, firewalls. It is something that affects not only, for instance, the LCC or just the revisor, but it has an effect on both the Senate and the House, and that's why the three of us, Mr. Kern, Mr. Eich, and I, are all here to bring this point before the committee. And I will...
Mr. Chair and members, most of the things on this list involve keeping our network secure, available, and reliable. The House, the Senate, the revisor, the library, and the LCC all share common network infrastructure. In addition to that, the Senate, revisor, library, and the LCC share routing and firewall devices together. The House maintains that equipment on their own. So very briefly, the most important thing on this list is a security audit. The Senate, the revisor, the LCC, and the library are currently participating in an audit now, but the previous audit was completed in April of 2001. This audit is very important to give us an idea of where we're at with our layers of security defenses. Without an audit, without verifying the fact that we're doing this in the proper manner, we're kind of shooting in the dark. We hope we're doing a good job. The audit helps us confirm that. The video and audio multicasting on here is meant to resolve some problems we have getting the audio between the two different bodies. The rest of the things on the list basically involve security, keeping our security systems upgraded to current levels so that we're able to stay ahead of the vulnerabilities that are always coming out. Some of these things are also on here for redundancy to make sure that our networks and website and so on are available at all times. I'd be happy to answer any questions about specific items on the list.
These specific appropriation requests, let's see, Greg, will they be part of the targets that we deal with in a couple of weeks? Do we deal with these separately, or?
Mr. Chair, more proper label for this perhaps might be appropriation needs or information system needs. And as these gentlemen have been explaining, we have this infrastructure that supports our computer networks that cuts across the legislature as an institution. And we have three different bodies that have to pay for them, and so we have to figure out ways to allocate them. But we thought it'd be helpful for you to see that behind the scenes you have network folks and other staff that do a lot of work to have this infrastructure work together. And sometimes it's not easy to say this particular piece belongs, is a cost that belongs to the House, this belongs to the Senate, that a lot of this is of the fact that our system works so well together is a result of their cooperation and collaboration, and then working with the appropriations committees to make sure that there's enough funding to support the system. So you're right that this will trickle up through the appropriations request process. That's sort of a long answer to your question.
Okay, Mr. Kern.
Mr. Chair, in the past, I think, and Greg can correct me on if I'm wrong on this, this has in the past been called one-time technology appropriation for one-time technology costs.
Okay. And is that recognized where? In the State Department's bill, in the State Government Finance bill, where would we recognize that? Where do we bring it forward?
Mr. Chair, members, I think it was 4 years ago that the LCC included an amount for one time that would support this joint effort.
Okay.
That was one of the reductions that we made in the 2,000 reductions that that were required across the entire legislative branch. That was our portion of that reduction.
And on the back
side
of the page?
I'll defer to Dennis on the voiceover IP stuff.
Mr. Chair, members, on the back side of that spreadsheet there, you're going to see voiceover IP.
Thank you.
Implementation. That's coming down sooner than we think. The House is going to undergo a small pilot project on this soon. I'd like to recognize Jess Mingle, who is heading up this project for the House. We're not asking for money at this point in time. That will be another. Somebody else will be asking for that money.
Thank you, Mr. Kern.
What I can tell you is on the first sheet you'll notice that there's an article just recently, I think January, where the state is looking in the next 5 years to change what the 50,000 Centrix lines all over to IP telephony. I can tell you that Intertek has looked at, they've been looking at this technology for a few years now. And they started off working on all calls distribution system. I won't go into that, but they started off little, and they started to look to go much, much larger. If you start looking at the numbers that we presented before you, cost savings are significant. You're going from $35 a month for an ISDN line down to about $10. And that is what makes this very attractive at this standpoint.
Mr. Chair, members, the figures are only for the House that you have handed out. Not on the spreadsheet, but on the number.
Any questions of the gentleman, Mr. Kern, or others at the table? At this point, that's just for a presentation, just for our information, correct? Okay, is there any other decisions or discussion that you're going before this committee? Nobody better call for a quorum call. I move that the committee be adjourned.
Bill 60.